This is the My Weight What to Know podcast, where we talk to medical experts about the latest research on weight management and how you can apply it to reaching your best weight. We have a very special episode for you with registered dietitian Carol Holland talking about the most effective ways to change our habits and set goals. Carol, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we know that for anyone who wants to reach a healthier weight or be healthier in general, behavior change is going to be an important component of the plan. And I have a whole bunch of questions for you about what people watching at home should know about how to change habits in a way they can stick to. So first, let's talk about why having some skills when it comes to behavior change matters. Like, why is this something to focus on?
I think a lot of people, when they're thinking about behavior change, whether it's related to losing weight or eating healthier or being more active, they aren't necessarily sure where to start. They just know they want to get started. And it becomes a hope. Behavior change is all about taking action and doing something differently. And if you don't have the skill to problem solve and make that a little bit easier in your life, then you spend your days just hoping that it'll change, right? I'd like to eat healthier. I'm not really sure how that's going. I don't really know if I'm succeeding or not, but I'm hoping that it's going to be okay. And that just leads to disappointment. So I really feel that I want to help people actually make change so they can feel like they've accomplished something. And that does require a little bit of skill building.
So how do you help people figure out which habits to change? Like, do you focus on the habits that people feel most confident that they can do or the ones that will have the biggest impact? How do you go about navigating that?
It really does depend on the person. For some people, they'll have a long list of stuff ready to go. They'll come and see me and say, Carol, I want to eat healthier and I know I need more veggies and my doctor said this and that. In those kinds of cases, then we go for the easiest change first. Let's do the thing that you feel the most confident changing, and that's going to build your skill and build your confidence. So when you get to the harder things that you're not as sure of, then those things seem a little bit easier. If the person isn't quite sure what they want to change or what they want to work on, then we look for values. What change do you think you could make that would have the most impact in your life? And that just takes a little bit of questioning, a little bit of help figuring out what's important in your life. Is it your kids? Is it your own health? Is it being around for your spouse? Once we've kind of figured that out, we can then determine together what change is going to be most impactful, and that gives us a really good starting point.
Well, I'm so glad you talked about the why, kind of the values that square us back to why we want to change in the first place, because I think that's often the question when people get discouraged is because they haven't connected the habit to something that they care about in their lives. Is that an important part of the process to think about why we want to do this?
100%, so important. I've seen so many folks who come to me and they say, oh, Carol, you know, I really want help losing weight. My doctor said I should. And then when I ask them, how do you feel about that? They say, oh, I'm actually okay. I don't really see the point of this. I just want my doctor to stop talking about it. And usually those changes are really hard to make. If you're doing it because somebody else wants you to, it's going to be really tough to be successful. So we always look for something that's important to you, and that's going to be a lot easier to change.
So that's probably going to be at the top of the list when we think about, okay, I want to change this habit. First question we should be asking ourselves is why?
Absolutely. And if you can't come up with anything, then look for a different change to make.
So Charles Duhigg says in his book, The Power of Habit, that we always want to try to replace a habit rather than get rid of it. Do you agree with that?
100% I agree with that. Let's take evening snacking for an example. If I just tell myself, oh, I'm not going to snack anymore in the evening, I know it's not the healthiest thing, so I'm going to stop doing it, then you're left without anything to do, right? If you are evening snacking because you're stressed or tired or bored or lonely or there's something else going on and you're using eating as a coping strategy, if you just take away your coping strategy, now you're left with nothing. And that can be really, really challenging to navigate through. So before we even talk about that change, I like to start with, what else could I do, right? If I'm an emotional eater and I'm snacking in the evening, before I even think about not snacking, I'm going to make a list of 5 things that I could do instead that might soothe me or make me less lonely or give me something to do. And then we look at replacing the habit that you're looking to change.
Okay, I'm so glad we're talking about this example because I wanted you to walk me through. Let's say that I have identified nighttime snacking as a real challenge for me. I'm asking for a friend here. Walk me through, like, what is the process you would do to help me change that behavior?
There are lots of different ways we can approach this, my first question to you is going to be, why do you think you're snacking in the evening? So there's a really great way we can look at why we're eating something that's not part of our daily meal schedule. So is it stomach hunger? Are you actually hungry? Did you not have enough to eat for dinner? Or did you not have any protein with your breakfast? Did you skip lunch? Something like that might actually lead to stomach hunger in the evening. Another option is mouth hunger. Are you wanting to eat that snack in the evening because someone else is eating it and it looks good or smells good or sounds really good? And then the third option is heart hunger. So that kind of leaves everything else, a positive emotion, a negative emotion, just a plain old habit. Once we know why you're eating that evening snack, now we can look at a list of possible solutions, new habits to substitute in, a different way to approach that situation. So the first thing we need to do is find out, why are you doing it in the first place? And then we can sort of move forward from there.
Okay, so let's zero in on mouth hunger, because I think that's really the challenge for a lot of people. You know, we've eaten dinner, we're turning on the TV, and we're just used to snacking while we watch TV. So let's say I've identified that that's my challenge. Where should I go from here?
I would still ask you to identify what it is you're getting out of that snack. If it's mouth hunger, that's a sensory thing. That means it tastes really good, it looks really good, it sounds good, or it smells good. So is there some other way you can satisfy that craving with maybe a different food or with the food that you had earlier in the day so that you're more satisfied and you don't need to have it again? I would almost say that heart hunger is more common, especially in the evening time when folks have come home from work, they're a little bit tired, maybe your day didn't go as smoothly as you wanted. It feels like mouth hunger because it tastes good, but really it's often satisfying some other kind of emotional need, and it's a coping strategy for something else that happened in the day. Regardless, we need to look at what specifically you're getting out of that snack in order to begin to look at a solution for it.
Okay. And do you suggest that, let's say that I've identified it's TV, I'm bored, I want something to do while I'm watching TV. You said earlier, maybe I'm drinking a cup of tea instead, or maybe how might I figure out a replacement for my usual chips while I'm watching Netflix?
So if it's truly mouth hunger and chips is what you're going for, then it might be the crunch that you like. So we could consider carrots or celery, something like that. If it's the saltiness that you like, then we could consider club soda, often tastes a little bit salty. If it's something else, like an emotional thing, I'm just bored, or this is my habit, crochet. You can't eat chips at the same time that you have your hands full of yarn, right? So anything like that, a Sudoku book, even a stress ball to just squeeze, anything like that would help take your mind off of it.
So I'm probably going to have to do some trial and error to figure out what is the right replacement activity or food.
Absolutely. There are 1,000 different options, and each person is going to be a little bit different. What some folks like to do is have a little basket of options. So wherever you normally sit when you're watching TV, you might have your crochet or your knitting and a crossword puzzle book and the stress ball and, you know, maybe your Christmas cards that you need to put stamps on. A whole little laundry list of activities that you can just reach while you're sitting there that don't require a whole lot of effort. And then you can see what you feel like in that moment and not have to plan too hard for it in the moment.
Carol, the people you've worked with who've successfully changed their habits, is there anything they all have in common? Like, is there a predictor of success you've noticed?
I think most of them feel that the changes they've made are their idea. They did not just do what somebody else told them to do because that other person must know best. They actually found some value in making that change themselves and some intrinsic motivation. So I know that if I eat healthier, I'm going to have more energy for my work day. I know if I exercise more, I'm going to be able to get up off the floor more easily when I'm playing with my grandkids. It's those kinds of real life examples that really make the change more impactful and are more motivating. So I think that's a really common thread. It's folks who've been able to identify a really good reason for wanting to do it on their own.
So you mentioned earlier that a lot of times behavior change can be in the realm of hope. Like we really want to do it and we hope we can, but we're not really backing it up with kind of practical strategies. How might someone figure out whether they're in the hope phase or whether they're really ready to make a change?
I really like to look at it as if it's a traffic light. So imagine that you're sitting in a vehicle and you're at an intersection and the road in front of you is the road to whatever change you're thinking of making. So I want to eat more vegetables. If I keep going down this road, it's the vegetable road. What color is my traffic light? So is my traffic light green, which means pedal to the metal, full steam ahead. I don't see anything wrong with continuing down this street. There's nothing holding me back. I'm going to go for it. Or is it a yellow light in front of you? So that means I really want to go down this street, but I might have some hesitations. Maybe vegetable street is really enticing and I see value in it, but my kids don't like vegetables, or my grocery budget isn't so big and I'm not sure what I can afford. Those kinds of hesitations might impact how successful you are at making that change. So we want to take that into account before we race through the intersection. So that's our yellow light. Proceed with caution. Or option number three, is the traffic light in front of you a red light? Which means I'm not interested in Veggie Street. I don't like the look of the houses down there. I'm not going. Full stop. So if you can figure out what color your traffic light is, that's going to go a long way toward helping you be successful. If you just assume your light is green, even though you have some hesitations, it can be really frustrating down the road when roadblocks come up. So we're really looking for if you're a yellow light, which most of us are in most scenarios, we have a couple of hesitations. We want to give ourselves a chance to problem solve around those potential barriers before we get too far down the road of frustration.
I'm actually so glad you're talking about this because I personally have tried to change behaviors that were a clear red light for me. I didn't really want to do them. There were lots of obstacles in front of me. And then I would beat myself up when I wasn't able to make the change. And I'll just use the example of waking up earlier in the morning. I've tried to do that so many times, even though I don't really want to. So what I hear you saying is focus on the habits where we're a green or a yellow light. We want to do it. We don't have that many obstacles and really go for it rather than trying to start with the habits that we know are going to be challenging.
Absolutely. So I'm a huge believer in taking baby steps and starting easy. So I think getting up early in the morning is a great thing to want to do, right? There's lots of stuff we can do with that extra time in our day, but that's also requiring quite a bit of change, right? That might mean we need a different bedtime the night before, might mean we need a different alarm clock. It might mean we need to see the doctor about our insomnia. There's 100 reasons why getting up earlier in the morning might be really, really hard. And if we're just going to continually beat ourselves up over a goal that we kind of want, but we know we're not ready for, that's just going to make us really discouraged and never try again. I would much rather see you say, okay, someday I'm going to be a morning person. But for now, I'm going to focus on eating a couple carrots with my lunch once or twice a week and see if that makes me feel good in some other way. And then you can step by step by step change that behavior until sometime then you do feel ready to tackle getting up earlier. And if you never do, that's okay. Not everyone's a morning person and that's okay.
I really love that example because it's like I can build confidence that I am capable of change in easier places so that when I am ready to become a morning person, I have more confidence that it is something I can eventually accomplish.
And I think this is one of the things that's wrong with New Year's resolutions. People get really excited. It's a big time of year. Everyone's talking about the changes they want to make, but you have an entire year. And really, most New Year's resolutions are about making a huge change that's going to impact your whole life. And those goals are really tough. So yeah, start small with a little goal that's almost, it's so easy, it's embarrassing that you're writing it down as a goal in the first place, right? My goal is to brush my teeth. I already brush my teeth every day after breakfast, but I'm going to write that down anyway. And tomorrow when I do it, now I get a check mark. I met my goal. So that's going to give me confidence. My brain's not going to say, yeah, but you engineered that. Carol, that's silly. That's a terrible goal. You already do that. My brain is just going to feel good that I got a check mark on my calendar that day because I brushed my teeth. That's the kind of starting point that we're looking for.
A lot of people also struggle with emotional eating. And that's what I kind of heard you describing earlier as heart hunger, turning to food when we feel stressed or lonely or overwhelmed. If that's the challenge that someone is dealing with, how might they think about changing that pattern? Like what kind of habits would we want to focus on or changing or putting in place?
I think it's really important to address the actual emotion that's involved before we address the coping strategy. So if you're an emotional eater, and let's say the emotion that you're feeling is sadness, if you keep feeling sad, but you take away your strategy of eating, now you don't have any coping strategies at all, and you're going to be sad and anxious. So I think if we can address the sadness, find someone to talk to, find a thing that makes us smile, even if it's just for a couple minutes in the day, some way to be a little bit less sad, then we can look at replacing the coping strategy. The same goes for any emotion.
So we'll want to start out by figuring out what emotion is it that we're trying to address. So I might take a different action if the emotion is loneliness, for example, versus stress or sadness.
100%. If you think about the ways that you deal with stress, you might do yoga or deep breathing or a stress ball or get extra sleep. Those are likely going to be quite different from your list of solutions to the problem of depression, which might mean seeing your doctor, seeing a therapist, taking medication. So we don't want to frustrate ourselves even more by trying to cope with an emotion that we think we have, but we got it wrong. It's really important to look at what's actually happening before we look at the coping strategy.
So let's use the example of loneliness, for example. Let's say that I struggle with feeling lonely at night after dinner, and I usually turn to food to cope with that. What are some alternative strategies I might explore rather than eating?
I think there are lots of social opportunities in every town, no matter where you live, that would fill that gap. And, you know, if you're a shy person, you might join an online group. There might be a discussion group or taking an online course of some kind. It doesn't have to be social in a big group of people in order to occupy yourself and get you some human contact when you would have been otherwise eating. If you're a more social person, then there's all kinds of groups. There's art-related things, music-related things, there's concerts to go to, there's clubs to join, even just going for a walk with your neighbor. Don't like going for a walk without a dog? Borrow a dog. There's all kinds of ways to do it, and that's going to be a really individual thing. But no matter who you are and how shy you are, the hardest part is going to be just doing that very first step. So if you can do that, the loneliness will get less and the participation will get easier as you go along.
Oh, that's such a good solution. Let's talk a little bit about goal setting. What kinds of goals do you encourage people to set?
The smaller, the better, for sure. So you might have heard of SMART goals, where you want the goal to be specific and measurable and timely and realistic. I think the most important part of the goal is that it's an action. So I hear a lot of people say, my goal is to lose 5 pounds. But weight's not a behavior, right? The things that you do differently in your life that might lead to weight loss, those are the goals. So I'm going to eat some extra carrots this week, or I'm going to cut that piece of birthday cake in half. Those are the kinds of goals that we're looking for, not things that we wish for. Other than that, we want it to be very specific. So I'm going to eat better is a really good idea, but it's really difficult to tell at the end of a week if you actually ate better this week than you did last week. So we're looking for something very specific that you can count. I'd like to eat better, and step one toward that is going to be eating 5 baby carrots for my lunch on Tuesday and Thursday next week with a bit of ranch dip. That's specific enough that at the end of the week, I can now say, yeah, I totally did that. And next week, I'm going to do it on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Or no, it didn't happen. Turns out I hate carrots. Or turns out I didn't have any ranch left and I really don't want to eat raw veggies without my dip. You can figure out what went wrong and build on that for the next time. It's important to pick a goal that you're sure you can do, that you're really confident you can meet, and make it an action that's going to be a change, a thing that you're doing differently this week than you did last week.
So my next question for you was, like, what's the time horizon you use when setting goals? But it sounds like we want to keep it really specific. Like, here's what I'm doing this week.
So people who make New Year's resolutions and they give themselves a time horizon of 365 days are going to tend to lose track of that goal pretty quickly. If we're looking at a maximum of 7 days, that's ideal. So in the next 7 days, I'm going to do this thing once or twice or maybe 3 times, depending on what the goal is. But any longer than that, and it starts to be a drag. You might forget, you might lose interest. that accountability is gone. So we're really looking at a pretty short time frame.
So let's say that I meet the first goal we've set together. I've eaten my carrots with the ranch dressing on Tuesday and Thursday. Do I set another goal that next week? And am I just trying to like make it a little bit bigger?
Yeah, there are a couple different ways you can approach that. If you were really confident and it was really easy to eat those baby carrots on Tuesday and Thursday, and you're really on the vegetable train and you want to expand on that, you could 100% say, I'm going to do it 3 days this week. And then the week after, I might do it 4 days. If you're really on the vegetable train, but it was kind of difficult to do it for those 2 days, then we just want to sit tight and practice. We always think that setting a new goal and a new behavior change is the most important and the most difficult. And it's not so easy, but maintaining that goal once you've reached it can also be really challenging. So if you didn't breeze through it, if you had to remind yourself and it was a struggle to get the baby carrots with ranch on Tuesday and Thursday, then do it again the next week. And if you need to do it again and again and again, you're just going to keep doing that same goal until it really feels quite comfortable for you. At which point you can either expand or you can say, no, I'm good. I like the amount of carrots I'm eating. I don't need any more. I'm going to set a new goal around physical activity or something totally different. As long as you can keep up the first goal that you set, it doesn't really matter what you choose to do next.
Carol, we're talking about behavior change and goal setting, and I want to ask you what you recommend people do when inevitably we fall short or things don't go the way that we want. I know for me, it's personally really hard to stick with a new plan when I, quote, haven't done it perfectly. I just want to give up. So how do you encourage people to deal with a setback without giving up completely?
That's a great question, and there are a couple of different strategies that I would suggest. Number one is what I like to call 80-20. So we do expect ourselves to be perfect. And for some reason, we're conditioned that any goal that we set for ourselves should be really, really hard. Otherwise, it's not worth meeting. But that's not realistic. There's nobody who is perfect, whether we're talking about exercise or diet habits or any other part of our life. It's a lot more realistic to say that we're going to strive to meet our goals, maybe say 80% of the time. The other 20% of the time, I'm going to give myself permission to do something different. So if I am really trying to eat healthy and I'm trying to do that by limiting my cupcake intake, then I'm going to still allow myself to have a cupcake occasionally. My 20% might be one cupcake a week, or, you know, if I'm a chocolate hound, it might be one small piece of dark chocolate a day. If we strive for 100% perfection all the time, we are going to be disappointed. That's just the human condition. So being a little bit gentle with ourselves and giving ourselves permission to not be perfect in advance can take away a lot of the shame and guilt that we might feel if we didn't quite meet our goal. The other thing I would suggest is that before we start trying to work toward a goal, we decide how confident we are. We want to look for very small, easy to do goals. And once I've figured out what I'm going to do, so let's use that example of I'm going to have 5 baby carrots for lunch on Tuesday and Thursday with some ranch dip. How confident am I that that's going to happen? So 10 out of 10 would be, I'm 100% sure that I can do this. 1 out of 10 is, yeah, right, Carol, in your dreams. If I'm a 7 out of 10 or higher, then there's a pretty good chance that I'm going to meet that goal. If I say, no, I'm a 5 out of 10, I'm 50% sure I can make that happen. That's not a reflection of you not having any willpower or you not having the skill to meet that goal. That means that goal is a little bit too complicated. You might be trying to do something too often or too much or for too long. So if you can decide how confident you are at the beginning, and if it's less than 7 out of 10, I would say readjust the goal. And that's going to avoid a lot of disappointment going forward if you're trying for something that's just too hard right now.
Oh, I love that perspective. So avoiding all or nothing thinking really in large part has to do with setting realistic goals in the first place, where goals we are pretty sure we can achieve. And so we're not going to just be completely devastated when we don't. So we know that mindfulness and self-compassion can really help whenever we're trying to make a change. Why is that? And how do you encourage folks to practice those techniques?
I think self-compassion is vital. Because if we don't have any, we're just going to take on every failure as if it were our fault. And I see this a lot in folks who are trying to lose weight, especially. They say, my goal is to lose 5 pounds in the next month. Their body's not cooperative, even though they did all the right things. It's really discouraging. And they're saying, I failed. But you didn't fail. You need to be kind to yourself and recognize that sometimes biology does what it wants. And no matter what we do, that goal is going to be really hard to meet. So being kind to ourselves and giving ourselves grace is really important in that respect. Also, sometimes we try and do things and we can be 100% confident that a goal that we've set for ourselves is really achievable and really doable, and we have all the values and everything's in place. It's looking perfect and life happens. It just, sometimes it's out of our control. And if we blame ourselves for those failures, it's going to be really tough to move forward. So instead of looking at them as failures, we want to say, what happened here? What was different about this situation that was beyond my control that made it hard for me to meet that goal? Is that a problem I can solve another time? If the answer is yes, great. And if the answer is no, it's not on me, so I'm just going to move on.
Oh, I love that. Last question from me, Carol. What is the number one thing you wish people knew about weight management?
Biology trumps behavior. I think when we're talking about weight management, it gets really personal. And we try really, really hard, and we're so focused on behavior, and we do such good work. People work very, very hard at making good choices in their life. And sometimes those choices get us where we think we want to go. And sometimes the outcome is a little bit different than what we have imagined. This is where we want to understand that we can't necessarily control things about our body and our biology. We can only control how we behave and what we do from day to day. So if we're focused on our behavior and we just let biology do what it's going to do and be as strong as it's going to be and not worry about it, that's where we get our best weight and our best health.
Carol, thank you so much for joining us tonight. This has been such an informative and really reassuring conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
We will be back to you with a new episode in a few weeks. Until then, please stay safe and take good care. Good night. This podcast episode was sponsored by Novo Nordisk Canada. It was created independently by My Weight What to Know with no influence from Novo Nordisk.